Good Thursday and welcome to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. Glad to have you along here today. We'll bring you feature agricultural news reports along with a look at regional and national agricultural news. And we'll start with regional agricultural news headlines right after this.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
U.S. food products, including almonds, walnuts, apples, and others grown in the West, will have their retaliatory tariffs removed from import into India. The announcement comes in the wake of a state visit by India's prime minister to the United States. The decision will improve market access of almonds at a time when the industry is working through a production glut and the associated low grower returns. India has been an active market for U.S. almonds since 2010, according to the Almond Board of California. Shipments of U.S. almonds to India have risen steadily over the past few years to become the top export destination for California almond producers. Aubrey Bentoncourt, president and CEO of the Almond Alliance, says they are greatly pleased to have this issue resolved so that U.S. almonds can once again compete fairly in one of the largest international markets. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack called the removal of the trade tariffs a major win for America's farmers, saying it builds on an estimated $15 billion in new or preserved market access for U.S. agricultural products under the Biden administration. Included in the list of products affected by the decision are almonds, apples, chickpeas, lentils, and walnuts. In addition, six World Trade Organization disputes will be terminated under the agreement between the U.S. and India. Those include the additional duties on certain products from the U.S. by India, other exported related measures, and certain measures related to solar cells and modules going from the U.S. to India. As part of the agreement, the U.S. will stop countervailing measures on certain steel products from India, measures related to the renewable energy sector, and certain measures on steel and aluminum products from India. Historic drought conditions that challenged Marin County's agricultural producers for almost 4 years are prominently reflected in a new 2022 Marin County Crop and Livestock Report. The recently released report covers a block of time before the 2022 to 2023 winter arrived to soothe and restore parched lands. Agricultural production in Marin dipped 3% in 2022, following a 5% slide a year earlier, all closely tied to a drought that forced local farmers to fallow more of their land. Agriculture Commissioner Stephen Parney and Inspector Allison Klein presented the report, which showed an estimated gross total production value of local products at $94,147,000. The value in 2021 was $96,656,000. The local record is $111,061,000, and that was set in 2015. The brightest news in a report was a 28% increase in the value of fruits and vegetables. Late spring rains helped many growers reestablish land that had been followed the prior year. There was a 30% boost in acres of fruit and vegetables planted compared to 2021. The value of locally produced organic milk was at $32 million, and that far outpaces the value of conventional milk valued at $2 million. This year's report features Marin's rich organic farming heritage. With over 75 organic operations, they wanted to share the stories of some of their innovative organic farmers and ranchers, according to Klein. In 2022, Marin Farms produced over $39 million worth of organic agricultural products and farmed over 51,000 acres organically. The annual report includes updates on pest prevention programs, sudden oak death, invasive weed management, and the organic certification program. All Marin County agricultural reports are online, and reports are also sent to the California Department of Food and Agriculture to be included in statewide reports. Out of 115 commonly grown food crops around the world, 87 use animal and insect pollinators. The U.S. grows over 100 crop plants that are pollinated by these creatures. Of these, 90 are pollinated by honeybees. Primary examples that require or benefit from pollinators include almonds, apples, pears, citrus fruits, cherries, pumpkins, cucumbers, blackberries, cranberries, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries, melons, tomatoes, soybeans, and sunflowers. Collectively, these crops make up approximately 33% of the typical American diet. It is estimated that 33% of the value of California agriculture comes from pollinator-dependent crops, which represents a net value of $11.7 billion. Wild pollinators residing in California's natural habitats provide more than 35% of all the pollination services to the state's crops. Most of the rest is provided by managed honeybees. Like many other species, pollinators are facing issues due to climate change and loss of habitat, and one of the biggest reasons for native pollinator decline is habitat loss. One of the biggest things that an individual can do to help is plant native flowers. It's a simple action that will support other wildlife too, such as bird and game animals, and can also improve the quality of water runoff, decrease soil loss, and reduce the need for expensive pesticides. Farmers and ranchers do the same kinds of things on a larger scale to support pollinators. They study the habitat already present on their land to support pollinators native to the area. They renew forage and nesting habitats by adding cover crops with local flowering plants, hedgerows, butterfly way stations, and other useful plantings. Reduced tillage practices can also improve pollinator habitat, as many native bees live in the soil, and they can also develop riparian or streamside zones for wildlife habitats and corridors. Log on to the California Department of Food and Agriculture website. One of the oldest trade associations in California recently met for their 123rd annual meeting. Formed in 1900, the California Creamery Operators Association is one of the longest standing dairy associations in the nation. Each year, CCOA brings together dairy producers, processors, academia, consultants, and other allied industry members to share information and discuss key issues important to the entire dairy community. The dairy industry recognizes this conference is unique, and there's value in getting key leaders together once a year to discuss what's on the horizon. That, according to CCOA Executive Director Michael Barcadero. The conference illustrated dairy's global outlook, including the trends, policies, and innovations shaping the future, and given California's leadership and climate policy and sustainability, several sessions discussed the realities of transitioning to clean energy, reducing emissions from farms, plants, and truck fleets, and meeting consumer, customer, and policymaker expectations. The conference was important for the industry and the state as a whole because the dairy industry is California's largest agricultural sector. Dairy farms in California are helping to feed the people in the state, the country, and the world. That according to American Ag Credit's dairy team lead, Art Mosener. He said the industry contributes nearly $20 billion a year to the gross state product, and 180,000 jobs are dependent on milk production and processing. As an association that is focused on building long-term relationships that are not just transactional, the California Creamery Operations Association Conference afforded the opportunity to listen to the unique challenges that dairy partners face and partner with farmers through the evolving value chain to help them achieve their goals, protect their legacies, and grow their future. When CCOA was formed, it was like most trade organizations, the advocacy arm of the growing dairy industry in California. Bacatero said, in fact, in its early years, the association worked with state officials to set standards of quality and sanitation, worked hard to establish what became the University of California, Davis, to provide education and research in agriculture, and lobbied Sacramento for policies favorable to the dairy industry. Today, however, more organizations have formed within the dairy industry, taking on specific roles. The CCOA has focused now on its annual conference, which was firmly established as an important gathering for the entire California dairy sector. Topics at this year's conference included sustainable water and energy practices, progress in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, particularly from methane, the role of dairy-derived renewable natural gas in fueling cleaner transportation, and how the trucking industry was able to comply with the state's new mandate to require all new heavy-duty trucks to be electric by the year 2036. U.S. Representative Dusty Johnson, a Republican from South Dakota, and Jim Costa, a Democrat from California, have introduced the Agricultural Labeling Uniformity Act to ensure uniformity of labeling standards for pesticides that are backed by sound science and approved by the Environmental Protection Agency. Doing so would provide certainty and stability for agriculture producers and consumers, according to the legislatures. Political agendas in states like California are causing confusion in the ag industry, according to Johnson. Labeling decisions must be based on sound science, not unsupported claims that instill fear in consumers. This bill would make it clear there is only one standard to follow. And growers depend on resources like herbicides to manage pests and disease prevention, which threatens the food supply chain, according to Costa. Amidst a global food crisis, he says we need to avoid any market challenges that will threaten food security. This bill will assure uniformity in the national pesticide labeling under federal law, which will result in a more sustainable and secure food supply. Several agricultural organizations are in supporting this bill, including Crop Life America. Crop Life America supports the Agricultural Labeling Uniformity Act because the federal regulation of pesticides and the labels that guide the usage of these products are paramount to growing food and keeping communities safe. EPA's career scientists thoroughly review and approve each pesticide while administrations come and go. Career EPA employees with years of expertise continue to do this important work. It's also important to note that the current regulatory structure is set up to facilitate a team approach between both federal and state regulators. EPA works to create a label that helps ensure pesticide can be used safely, and state agencies work with EPA to monitor compliance on the ground. That statement from Chris Novak, president and CEO of Crop Life America. The Agricultural Labeling Uniformity Act is supported by 360 organizations.
By now, most in the agriculture industry are familiar with the rise in number of products that make up the biological sector, and many are also aware of the influence that artificial intelligence and machine learning are having in other areas. There's a growing consensus among companies and industry members that AI and machine learning could actually benefit the biological product sector for agriculture by taking a more data-driven approach and making product benefits clearer to growers through this data. Russ Putland of Levy Bio believes the sector can accomplish this and improve sustainability for the ag industry.
When it comes to AI and machine learning, it's a little different with biologicals than it is with synthetic chemistries. When we think about a biological, they're microbes that are in plants today, and there's billions of them. So it's more of almost a screening process to find those positive attributes within those microbes, as opposed to discovering something or creating a new compound that synthetics, you know, that are synthetic and not natural. So AI and machine learning do a couple of things for us. One, they increase the probability of having success. We can do in weeks what used to take years, in terms of screening those microbes, understanding their genes and their functions underneath the genes. So we know what particular microbes do what in a plant, right? What do they express? That can be positive, that can be negative. And then we want to take those positive attributes and move them forward into some form of a product to help a crop of sorts to produce more food or better food or more sustainable food. Now, the real trick, once you've got the screening pool working, is in the past, before machine learning and AI was really prevalent, we had to look for single attributes at a time and isolate them. So if you were looking for efficacy, you would simply look for efficacy until you found something that was efficacious. Or if you were looking for shelf life in terms of your product being its live, you know, it needs to exist and needs to be able to live until we get it out on and producing in the root zone. So this allows us to do things like look for stability, efficacy, shelf life, all in one pass, rather than doing them in singularity. And think about it as looking at your grandma's house, that pile of Lego that's all messed up. And there's all these different pieces. There's the little ones, the big ones. There's parts of old spaceship in there. There's the old house set. And what our AI and data platform does in MicroBoost, it lays those pieces out in singular so you can see them clean and you know exactly what they are. So that when you design a product and say, I want X, Y, and Z, you can go back to that repository of functions, not necessarily microbes, but functions, and start combining options. And this puts us on a platform so much further ahead of where we'd be without machine learning and AI. It just increases velocity in terms of that process and the accuracy in which you can select more likely to work microbes.
AI and machine learning could open up a whole new area of data for biological products, which is one of the benefits of ag tech today, providing more data to the user for informed decision making. This in turn can make growers more trustworthy about products that could improve the well-being of their crop.
About 2 weeks into this role I have, I was in a farm in North Dakota, standing in a field with a producer, and he quickly said, you know, Russ, you need to have data, but I've got to be able to believe your data. And it's really important when you think about it. That's a mouthful. So one is getting credible and a volume of data that's acceptable to guarantee a consistent performance with a biological. The other is to be able to register, with the governing bodies, whether it be the United States or around the world. And, you know, to separate yourself from those, I would say, smaller, not smaller, but people that don't do the work. And they're out there, right? So it's difficult for producers. And this is where consultants and agronomists are going to play a really key role in getting these products on the farm for the producers to have a look at and to make some of their own evaluation along the way. I think it's really critical. Living things are going to perform slightly different in every area, right? And some are going to work really, really well in some areas, and some are going to work less well, right? So you end up with some variability within that. And really, seeing is believing. You know, we want people to see, you know, people that we've shown our other products, when they see them and you walk the fields with them and you go there with them, they get a chance to experience, and they also see some things they might not normally see.
On another note, Putland noted it is quite easy for companies to enter the biological product sector, which also has ended up blurring the lines for some growers about which products can actually accomplish something agronomically for them and which products can't. He calls for better regulations.
You know, when you think of the synthetic market and the years that it's been around and the regulatory that's evolved with that, really biologicals are in their infancy. It's very different in every geography. Even in the United States, you can register state by state, which is good in a sense, but also challenging. We don't want regulatory to become a barrier to companies wanting to advance biologicals, but we do need it as a clearinghouse where there's at least a universal standard. And I think it's really, really important to have that, because it goes a long way with the producer understanding, you know, this is at bare minimum what I'm receiving, right? Or what I can expect. And in the absence of that, it's a bit of a mess, to be honest with you, because you get, you know, people looking to make a quick buck, or, you know, that haven't done, you know, 4 years of trials in an area to understand, you know, what's it going to do in drought? What's it going to do in a wet year? Well, you know, there's so much variability, when you're dealing with abiotic stress or pests, there's so much to consider. So I think we need to work stronger, one, as a group of biological companies. I think that's part of it. And I think we also need to interact with, you know, the governing bodies like APHIS and be a part of those evolving standards, so that, one, we keep unproven products off a farmer's field, right? We don't want those in a farmer's field. And at the same time, we don't just want large corporations controlling what biologicals get registered. You know, it should be about the product, and it should be about whether it works, how well it works, and does it benefit the farmer in terms of, you know, financials, time savings, or, you know, it just consistency, that kind of thing. And it has to bring value across. The second piece of it's maybe not standards, but we can't just create products that are just sustainable. If they don't make financial sense, they're going to disappear. At some point, the legislative head tailwinds will go away, and those products are going to need to stand on their own. And I think, you know, resistance management, some financial positive impact, you know, there's many reasons. And truthfully, farmers want to use sustainable products. They don't question that. But it comes right next to their financial sustainability, right? That comes first. You know, they're not going to take discounts to use sustainable products. That would be a stretch. So we build them so that they have their own merits in terms of their financial prowess. And then, you know what, the sustainability piece gets dragged along with it. And it's a better way to entrench your product in the marketplace and to ensure success for those growers.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Charlstrom. Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
Senate appropriators unanimously approved a bill to fund the Agriculture Department and Food and Drug Administration through fiscal year 2024. That's a level of consensus that stands in stark contrast to the deep partisan divides on display during the House's markup of their agriculture and FDA spending bill. The Senate spending bill, which the panel approved 28-0 after just over an hour of discussion, would fund the agencies at $25.99 billion, more than $8 billion above the funding level in a Republican-led House bill. That House spending proposal drew intense pushback from Democrats on the Appropriations Committee over the course of more than an eight-week hour markup on June 14th. That session ended very abruptly after a particularly heated exchange between Representative Steny Hoyer, a Democrat from Maryland, and Committee Chair Kay Granger, a Republican from Texas. New Mexico Democrat Martin Heinrich, chair of the subcommittee, lauded the partisan collaborative nature of the Senate spending bill. School meal providers are getting some extra help from the USDA. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
Schools who participate in USDA school meal programs get partial reimbursement for those meals from the USDA. Now, during the COVID emergency, those reimbursements have increased to cover the rising costs of food. But now, there's no emergency. Reimbursements will be coming back down. But school food managers are still seeing food prices and labor costs going up.
And the result is they are expressing concerns about how they're going to meet the needs of the millions of children who will start school later this summer.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack says his department is jumping in to help. He told reporters,
"We're announcing today the availability of $1.3 billion of assistance and help distributed to states through a formula process to supply schools with necessary support and help to get them through a difficult time."
The money will be used by schools to buy domestically produced food commodities for use in school meals. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The U.S. House passed by a voice vote a bill to implement the U.S.-Taiwan Initiative on 21st Century Trade, a first-phase trade framework expected to lead to talks on ag and other trade. The bill highlights a rare nexus between U.S. trade and strategic interests with Taiwan, a bulwark against China and America's eighth-largest trading partner in 2021 and the seventh biggest in ag purchases last year. House Ways and Means Chair Jason Smith.
Chinese Communist Party will not intimidate the United States from deepening our relationship with Taiwan,
including a second phase of talks with Taipei that is expected to include agriculture. Taiwan bought roughly $4.5 billion in U.S. farm goods last year. The American Agro Women released their vision for what's important in the 2023 Farm Bill. Agriculture is on the front lines of challenges like dealing with climate, food security, national security, and world-class telecommunications to enable further developments in natural resource management. That, according to AAW President Heather Hampton Nodal. The group's recent work builds on concepts the group published in 2022 that include fundamentals like well-funded, flexible crop insurance, revitalizing research infrastructure, access to markets and inputs, and credit to help pay for exponential increases in inputs and equipment, and modernizing aging utilities for water and underserved telecommunications in rural areas. Their additions to the original vision include using export programs to secure global supply chains, increasing programs to support rural large livestock veterinarians, and workforce development for the timber industry. The Farm Bill is needed for food security and national security, as well as playing roles in a positive trade balance, according to Hampton Nodal.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.